We're holding on Choftes Amud Beis, three lines from the bottom. So we learned yesterday about the machlokas about Pada and Ula. When our Mishnah had given the case where a person says that these plants will be hektish until they're chopped down, what happens during that time? So we said that Bapada had said that as long as they're still attached to the ground, even if you poda them, they're going to go right back to being hektish again, because the neder was that they're going to remain hektish until you chop them down. Then once you chop them down, Bapada holds that the kedusha can't just disappear without doing anything, therefore you have to be poda them. Whereas Ula had said that you don't have to be poda them at the end, and we mentioned the Ram explained there are two explanations about what Ula says. Is he agreeing? The Rashba had said that he's agreeing with Barpada on the first part, that it will become hektish over and over again. The Machlokas is only about at the end, you need to be poda it, or is it that his neder automatically expires, because it was only supposed to be until the plants are chopped down. That was according to the Rashba. And then he said, according to the Moshe Kotavi, then we said that according to him, actually, Ula would disagree on both things. He would say that you don't say that it's going to become Kaddish over and over again. So now the Gemara is going to discuss something within Barpada's opinion. So the Gemara says, Yosef Rab Ovin Rab Yitzchok Berebi, Kamed Rab Yivya, Rab Ovin and Rab Yitzchok Berebi one time was sitting in front of Rab Yumia as Talmidim. On the side of here, it says really it's supposed to be Bar Yosef, whatever. Become a namnim Rab Yumia. Rab Yumia was napping. So as I was starting to say yesterday, the word menamnim in the Gemara can either mean literally napping, as in Rab Yumia was very tired, but he's still sitting there in front of his Talmidim and ready to discuss things in Torah with them, even no matter how tired he is. Or even there's a place in the Gemara in Moed Katan where the word menamnim means he's about to pass away, and the idea might be the same kind of thing, that it means that he's on his deathbed and still his Talmidim are still in front of him to learn Torah, and he's still available to teach them. Anyway. So Yasu v'ka'amri. So now these two Talmidim, Rav Ovin and Rav Yitzchak, were sitting and discussing as follows. Libarpada. Now, according to Barpada, the Amar Pedon Chozes v'Kodshes, where we said that with these plants, as long as they're attached to the ground, even if you poda them, then they will become Kodesh again. Now, by the way, here's where the Ran brings a proof that This is a proof for the Moshe Kartavi's position, because this is talking about the first half of it, what happens while the plants are attached to the ground, and we're saying the question is only on Barpada, implying that Ula would disagree with that. Well, that's how the Moshe Kartavi explained it, as opposed to, according to the Rashba, why are they asking the question only according to Ula? Why are they not mentioning according to Barpada? Why are they mentioning only according to Barpada? Why are they not mentioning according to Ula as well? Tosfos on the next Amud says that maybe that's not such a strong question, because you could say, sure, the question is about both of them, but the fact is Barpada is the one who explicitly said the words that Chozres for Kodshus, and therefore the Talmudim are asking according to that. But yes, in principle, they could have asked according to Ula as well. Anyway, they're saying, based on that, Tifshut Deboyer of Hoshia. Based on that, we should be able to answer a question that Rav Hoshia asked in a matter of Kiddushin. Now, yesterday we talked about that we had that Rava had thought to draw an analogy between the hektish that would between the kedusha that we're talking about over here in kedushin, and Abaya pointed out to him the difference is that kedushin is kedushas aguf, whereas here we're dealing with kedushas damim. But now let's take another angle on it. Rav Hoshia asks a question. Hanosin shtei prutis la'isha. Suppose that a man gives two prutis to a woman. Va'amala, he tells her, ba'achas iskadshi li hayom. With one of them, I want to be makadish you today. Or ba'achas iskadshi la'achas sha'agoshik. Then, the second one, I want to be basically an escrow. I want it to be that you will be makadish with it to me, that you will be makadish to me with it after I divorce. So Rav Hoshia's question is, does that work? Now, based on what we're saying, based on what Barpada is saying, so in other words, the question comes down to, the first kedushin obviously is valid right now, there's nothing preventing it, but the second one, you could argue, that it's davar shaloi bala olam. How is he able to be makadish? Once he's makadisher with the first pruta, there's no possibility of him being makadisher again under the current circumstances, only if he divorces her first. Wouldn't that be davar shaloi bala olam? And the Gemara actually in Kedushin discusses this and has a couple of other explanations what the question is. But anyway, the bottom line is that these Talmudim are saying that the same way as Barpada is saying as far as these plants, that you makdish them, and then and you're saying even if I redeem them, then Kedusha will come back on them. Hachanami, the Kedushin, have a Kedushi, the same thing. We could argue that the second Kedushin is valid Kedushin because, yes, he's not in a position to be Makdisho yet, but that's fine. He's not in a position for the plants to become Kaddish again after he's poured to them either, and yet they do as a result of his neder. So therefore, that would answer the question. However, it's our Bahur Rav Yirmiya. At that point, Rav Yirmiya woke up. So if we mean that he was napping, then it means that now he had been listening to what they said, and now he actually wakes up. If we mean menamnim as in the near death, then it means the same thing, like he rallied himself. Omalahu, and he tells them how that's not a valid comparison. My komedam mitun don hu l'pdom achev. How are you comparing where he himself was poured to them versus where somebody else was poured to them? Now, all this time we've been talking about that the person himself who made the neder about these plants is the one who's also going to be poured to them. So now you can say, there's only two rishuyas that we're talking about over here. There's his rishus and there's the rishus of Hekrish. So you can say that his neder prevents them from going back into his rishus. His neder prevents them from going back into his rishus. It requires them to remain in the rishus of Hekdesh. And therefore, as soon as he takes it out of the rishus of Hekdesh and puts it back in his rishus, well, then his neder is back in effect and becomes Hekdesh again. So therefore, you could say that in that case, then we can be talking about according to Barpada and maybe according to Ula as well, that we would say it keeps on becoming Kodesh over and over again.
This is what he answered when he woke up,
right. L'pdom acherim, but how are you comparing where somebody else was poured to them? When somebody else was poured to them, then even if afterwards it ends up back in his rishus, then what happens? So now you don't have the rishus of the original owner of it. Now you have it in somebody else's rishus. And at that point, Hekdesh can't be chal on them either, because the neder was that these plants were a person can't make a neder on property that belongs to somebody else. So therefore, if he makes the neder that these plants are going to be Hekdesh, and then somebody else is poured to them, that now they're in somebody else's rishus, his original neder has no ability to make them Hekdesh again. So even if afterwards he goes, and even if afterwards that other person goes and sells them to him, then already the chain has been broken, and we don't say they become Kurdish again. So you should know, Rabbi Yirmiya tells them, Hachi Amar Rabbi Yechanan, Pdonhu, you should know that Rabbi Yechanan said that there's a difference. If the person himself who was Makdish the plants is poured to them, Choser Sipdoshis, then indeed, like we said, like Barpada said, and maybe Ula as well, that they do become Kodesh, but Pdom Achirim in Chosis for Kodeshis. But if somebody else is poured to them, then they do not become Kodesh again.
Why can the chain get broken when he's poured?
When he himself is poured, it goes right back to his Rishus, and his neder was that it won't be in his Rishus. Yeah, so therefore, immediately goes back
to it goes out of Kodesha.
No, that's the point. Well, yeah, but on the other hand, there's still his neder in effect. His neder was that these are going to be Korban, meaning that they're going to be off limits to him. So as soon as he's poured to them, but Rabbi Yochanan says, when somebody else is poured to them, then the chain is broken, because then it's not in his rishus, and it's not in Hek. So it's not in his rishus, so the neder is not chal again, and it's not in Hek, which is rishus.
This other guy also chopped it down.
No, it seems it wouldn't matter. So we're talking about even if the other guy was poured there from Hekdesh while they're attached to the ground. No, once they're detached, then you have the question. According to Barpada, you have to be poured to them one last time, and according to Ula, you don't even need that. No, then we're not talking about when the person did it after that, because according to either one, according to Ula, you don't even need to be poured to them at that point, and according to Barpada, it's not going to keep on going, even if the person himself who made the neder was poured to them, wouldn't go back. No, we're talking about while they're still attached to the ground. So
what about if the second person is a shliach of the first one?
If the second one is a shliach of the first person, that might be different. Shlocha shalom kamoisei. On the other hand, the truth is, well, When it comes to Me'ilah, actually, we do have rules of Shlichus that are different than the rest of the Torah, namely that the Shliach has to be doing exactly what the Mishaleach said without any alteration. We had something about that earlier in our Masechta, actually, and otherwise it's not a Shliach. But okay, over here, if Reuven tells Shimon to go, if Reuven tells Shimon to go be poydeh, that might be considered that Reuven himself is doing it. That's a good point. I don't know. Anyway, what were you saying?
Who holds that it goes back to
the Shkina? So that's the thing. According to the Rashba, both Barpada and Ula hold that it keeps on going back to Kyush. The only machlokas is what are we doing at the end once it's chopped down? According to the Moshe Kartavi that we quoted in the Ran yesterday, they argue about both points. Only Barpada says that it keeps on going back to Kyush. Ula would hold that it does not. Yeah. That's the thing. In our Gemara over here, when the two Talmidim, Rav Ovin and Rav Yitzchak, are saying that their question is according to Barpada, so the Ran uses that as a proof for the Moshe Kartavi, because in that case, then if it were according to the Rashba, why they're not asking according to both of them? According to Tosfos, that's not such a big question because okay, they mentioned Barpada because he mentions the point explicitly. Okay. Anyway. So Rav Yumiya is telling them that you should know Hochi Amar Rav Yechanan, and this is what Rav Yechanan said, Pedonhu, if the person himself who was makdish them is poydeh them, chozer sekdoshes, then indeed they become kodesh again because his neder is still in effect. Pedom acherim ein chozer sekdoshes, but if other people are poydeh them, then they do not become kodesh again. Now, Rav Yumiya finishes off, so you're trying to compare it to a case of kedushin, the isha kipdo'o acherim danda. Now, the case of Kiddushin with a woman is the equivalent of somebody else being poida. Now, in what way? How is it similar to others being poida? So the Ran explains like this. As soon as he divorces her, she's back in Hur Rishus. So in other words, it's the equivalent of the plants being in a different Rishus. Now, the Ran goes on to say, the Ran goes on to ask, well, one second then, in that case, it's one of two Rishuyas. Either she's in her husband's Rishus when the Kiddushin are in effect, or she's in her own Rishus. Abiraba, why are we saying it's Kibdua Achedim? Where's the third party over here? There's only the husband and her. Either she's in the husband's Rishus, or she's in her own Rishus.
Her age, her father.
No, well, that's fine. But if she's a Kana, then it's her father stands in place of her Rishus. Either way, there are no three Rishuyas. At any given time, when she's miskadesh, then she's in the rishus of her husband. When she's divorced, actually, even with Tana, if she's divorced, she's in her own rishus anyway. There's no third party. There's him father. And there's her. No. Forget the father. But we're talking about once she's divorced. There's only two rishuyas to talk about. Anyway, let's say we're talking about an adult woman, and after all, he's giving to her anoisin shtei pirtus leisha. So we're talking about that she's a goat. Whatever. Anyway, so the Ran explains the reason is because, after all, the woman is not the one who can be Makadish herself to the man. The man has to be Makadish her. The man is the one who gives her the Kiddushin and says, Hareyat Makadish. To say that the case of Kiddushin should be considered like he himself was Poida would require that she herself has the ability to get herself back into the husband's Rishus by being Makadish herself to him. And we know it's not so. Now then, the Ran goes on to say that actually really what it is that with a woman, what you really have is, on the one hand, she can't be Makadish herself. On the other hand, the fact is that she has to agree to it. She has to agree to it. So in that sense, he says the case of Kiddushin is sort of like a three. It is. You don't have three Rishuyas over here. Of course not. You only have two. But in effect, it's not really that she's, so to speak, not that she's in her own Rishus, but rather that when she's in a position to accept the Kiddushin, she's mafter herself to allow herself to be nikneh by the husband. So it's not exactly the same as the case of Menetius when he himself is being poydeh. So that's the thing. The Ran says it's not exactly like the case of him being poydeh. It's not exactly like the case of somebody else being poydeh. It's sort of in between. And that is why Rabbi Yemiya is telling them you can't answer Rabbi Hoshia's question based on this matter of the plants. Because here you have sort of an intermediate thing which you don't really have over there. Namely that she's in her own Rishus, but she has to agree to the Kiddushin, which you don't have over here. Then he goes on to mention, then the Ram goes on to mention that the Rashba said that even though the Gemara has not answered the question over here, Rav Hoshea's question, nevertheless, there are other Gemaras, including one towards the end of Masechta, that seem to imply that in fact it would work. So that if the husband gives, if a man gives her two prutas and says, one you should be Mekodesh today, and one you should be Mekodesh again after I divorce you, then from something later in our Masechta, and also something in Ksuvos, there's an implication that it would work. And the Rashba explains, because so that's the thing. The Rashba says, here in our Gemara, we're saying you can't prove it from our case with the plants, but there are other Gemaras that seem to imply that it would work.
Well, so there's two things over here against that. Number one, that was about the Oilum, as I mentioned earlier. And number two, the chain's been broken, because in between there's a get.
Right, but the Rashba's point is, the Ran says, since he has the ability to be makadish her net, to be makadish her now, then even though there's going to come later on a time when he can't, nevertheless he's able to be makadish her now.
Even though she has to agree,
of course. So therefore, we're saying it's not that it doesn't work. So that's the thing. So the Rashba explains, based on all Gemara, you can't answer it, because you could argue it's not exactly like the case of the plants, as Rabbi Yemi is saying. But nevertheless, there are other Gemaras that imply that it would work. The Ran himself disagrees with that and says that the fact is the difference is. Yes, you're able to be with an item. You're able to be makdish it now. Let's say, for example, you have a case, for example, where a person said, where Reuven says to Shimon, "This field that I'm selling you now, when I buy it back from you, then it should become hekdish." So later on in the Masechta, we're going to learn, and also in Ksuvos, we learn that works. When he buys it back from Shimon, then it becomes hekdish. So the Rashba says, well, therefore, the same thing should apply to Kedushin. So the Ran himself is saying that there still is a difference. Because after all, that hekdesh that he could do later on, he could conceivably be makdish it now. As opposed to the kedushin that we're talking about over here. Sure, the first kedushin can be chal right now. The second kedushin, there's no way for it to be chal on top of the first kedushin. Once she's makudish to him, then there's no second kedushin. So therefore, the Ram says it's not really the same thing. Nevertheless, though, he says the Rashba and also the Rambam hold that indeed the answer to Rav Hoshea's question is it would work. That it would in fact be a valid kedushin, in advance. The Gemara says, Itmar Nami, Omer of Ami, Omer of Yechanan. There was said also as a statement of Amiroyim that Rab Ami said in the name of Rab Yechanan. In other words, it's not just Rab Yumi telling us, but also Rab Ami telling us, Lo Shanu Elosh Donhu, that this whole thing that we're talking about the plants becoming Kodesh over and over again, would apply only if he was part of them, because then, like we said, there's only two Rishuyas to talk about, and as soon as it comes back into his Rishuyas, then his Neder kicks in again, and it goes back to Hekdesh. But if other people are part of them, in Chosnes of Kedoshes, then they do not become Kaddish again, because now the chain has been broken.
If there's one person who's Pode, and after, you know, afterwards he changes his mind, does he have to give a get?
One second. No, I think you're confusing two different things. Pode we're talking about as far as the plants. So get is talking about as far as the woman. So you're talking about now if this husband gave her two prutas, and he said, with one you're Mekodesh to me now, and with the second one after I divorce you. So, yeah, I mean, if he gives her a get in between, that's what's necessary in order for the second Kedushin to be chal. Once he gives her the get.
No. There's no confusion here. If he changes his mind between the first and the second pruta, and he says he doesn't want to marry her, does he have to give her a get? Is she considered married or not?
Well, once he gave her the first pruta, she's Mekodesh, sure. Once he gave her the first pruta and she accepted it, then she's Mekodesh. Yeah, get is going to be needed.
Okay.
The next few Mishnayos, the next few Mishnayos until the end of the Perek, are going to be talking about where a person makes a neder. Now we're going to have some in our Perek, and then we're going to resume this topic in the sixth Perek. If a person makes a neder on a certain category of things. So we have to figure out what is included in that category. So here we're going to start with, in our Perek, we're going to start with categories of people. So a person makes a neder that I won't have enough from a certain category of people, or that they won't have enough from me, whatever, then we have to figure out who is included in that category. That's going to be the next few Mishnayos in our Perek. So the Mishnah says, Hanodami Yode Hayam, if a person makes a neder not to have enough from people who go down to the sea, meaning people who travel on the sea. fishermen, long distance business people, whatever, mutter b'yoshvei hayabasha. He's mutter with to have hana from people who stay on land. Well, one side, that's not such a, I mean, it's more, the point is the other thing. On the other hand, if he makes a neder, not to have enough. And the point is also that the Mephoshim say, even if you have somebody who once in a great while goes into the Yam, that's not enough to make him considered Yodei Hayam. Yodei Hayam would be the people who regularly go on ships. But Miyoshvei Hayabasha, but if he makes a neder, not to have enough from the people who live on dry land, also miyodei hayam. And not only is he also to have enough from the people who live on dry land, but even also from the people who go on the sea. Sheyodei hayam b'chlal yoshvei hayabasha. Because people who go into the sea are included in the people who live on land. Because ultimately, they dock their boat and they come back onto dry land. There's Gemara in Tomid that says that Alexander the Great had a long discussion with Ziknei HaNegev, with the elders of the south, actually south of Eretz Yisrael. And he asked them a whole bunch of divrei chachma. So one of them, he asks them, what's better, the sea or the land? And they answer him, the land is better. You see that even the people who are at sea, they're never at ease until they actually dock and get back onto dry land. So our Mishnah is going in the same sense. In other words, that even though these people right now are in the Yam, eventually they're going to come up onto the Yabosh. In fact, the Ran brings a couple of interesting things on this in this regard from the Yerushalmi. What happens, for example, suppose that he makes a neder that 30 days from now I will be also in Yodei Hayam. So you have people who right now, when he first says that, are at sea, and by the time the 30 days are over, they're back on land. Do we go according to how they were at the time of the neder, or do we go according to how they are now? Continues the Mishnah. Loi ke'elo shahochen me'achol v'yafo. Now you should know what we're talking about, and we're going to see in the Gemara whether this last piece is referring back to the ratio to the Sefer. We're not talking about the kind of people who go from Akko to Yafo. Akko and Yafo are both on the coast of Eretz Yisrael. They're around 70 miles apart. Nowadays you get in a car and you drive and you're there, you're from one to the other in an hour. Back then, we're talking about you taking a boat. So it would take a few hours. It would be a date. The point is, though, it would be a day trip. It wouldn't be something where you're spending overnight on the water. So the Mishnah is saying that we're not talking about the people who go from Akko to Yafo, which is only a day trip. Elevate Mishnah Dark de la Farish, only rather we're talking about people who go on long voyages into the deep sea. So what is that last part referring to? So the Gemara says, Rav Papa and Rav Acha b'rei de Rav Ikka. So Rav Papa and Rav Acha b'rei de Rav Ikka argue on what that last line of the Mishnah means. Chad masni ha-reisha v'chad masni ha-sefer. One says that last line about Akko and Yafo is referring to the reisha of the Mishnah, and the other one says it's referring to the sefer. So meaning?
Farish means long distance.
The farish means long distance, yeah. So, yeah. The word lafar, meloshin, one of the meanings of the shorish, peirei shin, means to separate. So mishadak lafarish means people who separate from dry land and go in and go in the water for long periods of time. So again, Rav Papa and Rav Acha b'rei Rav Ikka are arguing this last line of the Mishnah, what is it referring to? Man de masniya reisha masnahofi, the one who says that it's referring to the reisha of the Mishnah, explains it as follows. Hanodim Yodei Hayam mutter b'yoshvei yabasha. Person makes a neder not to have anah from Yodei Hayam. He's still mutter to have anah from people who live on dry land, implying hob Yodei Hayam also, implying that he's usur, that his neder is in effect as far as the Yodei Hayam. So now, within that, the Mishnah is telling us a kula that what Yodei Hayam is he usur in, the loy ke'elo ha-hocha me'akko le'yafo, we're not talking about the kind of Yodei Hayam who just go on day trips from Akko to Yafo. Those kind of people, in effect, are considered Yoshvei Yabasha. Because, yes, they go for short times on the water, but basically they're on dry land. Ela, Minisha, Daukim, Lafarish, rather his neder is chal only on the people who go on longer voyages. So if we say that it's referring to the Reisha, then this Loika Elisha Hofen Ma'akal Yafo is a kul. within this that we're saying that he's noder miyoder hayam would only be that he's noder, that he won't have enough from the people who go on long sea voyages, but not from the people who go on day trips. And Uman de Masniya Sefer, the one of these two Amiroyim who learns that it's referring to the Sefer, Masni Hachi, he will rather learn that the Mishnah is saying as follows, Hanodim Yoshva Yabosha, also Yodei Hayam. We said the Sefer said that if a person makes a neder not to have anah from people who live on dry land, then he's also to have anah from Yodei Hayam, because we said eventually the Yodei Hayam go back to dry land. So now you should know the Mishnah is saying a din l'chumra, you should know, we're not only talking about when we say Yodei Hayam, that we don't just mean the people who go on day trips from Akko to Yafo, even people who regularly go on long trips, because eventually he comes back to dry land as well. So in other words, if the Mishnah hadn't told us that, according to this man Omer, then we would say, you know what it means, if he makes a neder from Yoshva Yabosha, sure, he's also in people who stay on dry land. He's also fine also in people who go on day trips, because basically they're on dry land. But a person who goes on a 2 week or 3 week or whatever trip, a cruise in the ocean, maybe that wouldn't be included. No, the Mishnah is telling us not only the ones from Akko to Yafo are included, but even the ones who go on longer trips. Yeah. Next, the Mishnah says, again, before we go to the next Mishnah, so first of all, the Ran explains many times when we have things in Nedarim that are left undecided, we have to go to Chumrah, because after all, we learned earlier in the Masechta, Stam Nedarim Lahafmir or Perushim Lahafmir. We said that when you have a Loshen of a Neder that could be interpreted Lachumrah or could be interpreted Lachula, we have to interpret it Lachumrah, unless we said, if the person explains what he meant, then we can go Lachula. So over here, since we have the Machlokas, Rav Papa and Rav Acha, Be'ed and Rav Ikka, then we have to be Machmir and say that it means that if he made the neder from Yoshva Yabosha, then it means he would be also in all people. Now, by the way, the Ran does mention the point. We can't say that he made this neder open-ended, because then it would be an impossible neder to fulfill. Eventually, a person has to have enough from some people. A person can't live as a hermit indefinitely. So therefore, we could argue that wouldn't even be considered a neder. That would be like the nidre havai that we learned about earlier in the parak, which is just like an exaggerated neder. We'd have to be talking about, right, where he says for a few days, let's say, where such a thing is possible, right? The point is, in other words, the Mishnah is not mentioning that point, but we're meant to understand, says the Ran, that that's what we're talking about, that he puts some other kind of limitation on it, such that it's not an impossible neder. So the Ran also brings from the Rashba that we're not going to say if a person one time goes on a boat trip, then he's considered Yodei Hayam. We're talking about people who regularly make such trips, or maybe we're talking about people who were on the water at the time when he made the neder, and there's where the Ran brings in that Yerushalmi about what happens if he made the neder in advance and the person is no longer Yodei Hayam at that point. So also the Ran mentions another point that it also mentions in the Yerushalmi. What if we're talking about people who are going on boats for business purposes? What happens, for example, if people just go on boats for cruises or for just people go on a trip on a boat just in order to sightsee or whatever? If it's from Akko to Yafo, sure, but what if, for example, you have, let's say you think of cruises nowadays, they can last a couple of weeks. I was saying before cruise, I shouldn't have said that actually. So we're talking about, let's say, you know, if a person takes a business trip on a ship that takes a few weeks, no question about it, he's considered Yodei Hayam. But if he's just going the tile, it may be a longer trip, but he's not going for business, he's just going in order to enjoy the sights. Is that considered, the Yerushalmi brings up the question, is that also considered Yodei Hayam? Or is Yodei Hayam only the people who go, who are traveling because they have to, and the Yerushalmi leaves it undecided, and again, the Ran says we have to be machmir.
Nowadays, you can answer that when they go on these trips, they make stops every second day, people go off.
Well, that may be, but the point is, even if, let's say, for example, I mean, think of, Latayel doesn't have to just mean to sightsee. For example, Latayel, I mean, it does, but it means, let's say, for example, you know, you think of before planes were common, if you wanted to travel between Europe and America, you'd have to take a boat, and you're not stopping in the middle, you're going for several days straight. But you could have conceivably where a person is going only the tile, he's not going on business, you know, he's a rich person, he's just going in order to travel to the other place and sightsee. So the Yerushalmi is asking, is that also considered Yodei Hayam, or would Yodei Hayam be strictly people who are going for business or because they're moving there or whatever? Okay. So the Ram says again, you have to be machmir on it. Next, the Mishnah says, Hanoya meroya hachav. If a person makes a neder not to have hana from people who are seen by the sun. Now, the Gemara is going to explain, if he meant people who can see, then he would use a different expression. The fact that he says meroya hachama implies, as the Mishnah is going to go on to say, people who are seen by the sun. So therefore, also after sumin, so he's also to have hana from blind people. You're going to say roya hachama means people who can see the sun and blind people can't. No, shabon is scamming there. El misha hachama roya oisam. What he means by that is people who are seen by the sun, meaning, in other words, seeing people, and not only people, but also objects, that the sun shines on them. As the Gemara is going to say, what we mean, as opposed to what. Now, what would happen, by the way, if he were to, what would happen if he were to tell us that, no, I meant something different? So the Rosh says that wouldn't work, because we learned earlier, the same way we said by Shavuos, the same would be by Nedarim, a person can't make up his own definitions of words. We say, the Nedarim holochach halosh ne'odim, that's only the general principle throughout these dinim, that we go according to the way that people talk. So therefore, if people use the word roya hachama to mean people or objects that the sun, so that the sun shines on them, then he doesn't get to say that, no, I only meant something else. So the Gemara says, my time, why do we assume that that's what it means? Because otherwise, if he meant people who can see as opposed to people who couldn't, then he would have used the expression, min haroyin, that I'm making a neder not to have hana from people who see. Anybody who sees can see the sun. So there'd be no reason, the Ran explains, so there'd be no reason for him to mention roya hachama. He could have said royin, and we would understand that it means anybody who can see. So therefore, he has to mean that people or things that the sun sees. Now, what does that mean? La'apuki dogim. So that would exclude fish, because fish are not seen by the sun, so to speak, because they're underwater. Ve'ubrin, and also unborn babies, because they're not seen by the sun, because the sun can't reach them. So therefore, if he makes such a neder, he would be able to have hana from them. What kind of hana? Sort of Yaakov Emden adds the point. It's true that fish sometimes surface come to the surface. Sometimes fish do come to the surface, but still they have to still have some part of their body in the water. Otherwise, if the sun shines on them entirely, they're going to dry out and die. Now you're mentioning, for example, dolphins or whatever that leap out of the water.
They have to come up free.
Well, no, they have to surface to breathe. So dolphins and whales have to surface to breathe, but most of their body is still in the water. It is true, there are dolphins, for example, and some other kind of fish that fly completely out of the water. So maybe if we go according to Yaakov Emden Svara, maybe indeed those kinds would be included in Roya Hachama. The regular kind of fish that stay, that always some part of them is in the water, are not called Roya Hachama. As far as Ubrim, as far as what kind of hana can you have? They're covered up. What kind of hana can you have from an unborn baby? Sort of Yosef Engel and Gilyon Ashask was a cute idea. Imagine, for example, that there's a wind blowing, so you want somebody to stand there as a windbreak to keep the wind from blowing on you. So let's say, for example, you have a pregnant woman. Her stomach is much wider than normal because she's carrying a baby. Therefore, you might use her for that purpose. That would be considered having hana from the baby.
I guess
Rabbi Yosef Engel figures that the main hana is from the baby, because she herself, if she weren't pregnant, she'd be too skinny to be a very good windbreak, and therefore, yeah.
The baby is born indoors.
Once the baby is born, he's still called Roya Hama, because now, well, even if he's born indoors, the fact is the sun is able to shine on him. It's one thing you're talking about, for example, fish. By their nature, they stay in the water, but people, by their nature, stay indoors.
Amazing. I can never think about this crazy thing.
Next, the Mishnah says, Hanoda Mishchorei Harosh, if a person makes a neder not to have hana from people whose heads are black. Now, you have to realize that, you're talking, in the time of the Gemara, most Jews looked like, your average Middle Easterner nowadays, they had dark hair. So therefore, Shchoreh HaRosh was a popular term for people who whose hair is visible.
Does it mean the guy who's working in the chimney?
No, it doesn't mean like chimney sweeps or whatever. then he'd say that their whole body is black. No, we're talking about that they have black heads because most people, most Jews at that time had their dark hair.
Does that mean the head or does it mean the scalp?
It means the scalp of the head, yeah.
Because of the people in some in general, they're dark.
We're not talking about people who are dark skinned, like the Pushim or whatever, because then that would be a different term. Then he wouldn't say Shchoreh HaRosh, then he would say Shchoreh HaGuf or something. No, what we mean is, in other words, people who are fair skinned or olive skinned or whatever, but they're the head of their hair is the hair of their head is visible and is black. So wait, we're going to define. Also, one second. Also Bakorchin, he's also not only to have Hanah from people who have hair, but also from bald people, even though they don't have hair, as we'll explain in a second why. Obale Sevas, he's also to have people to have Hanah from people who have white hair. Umutter Banoshim of Akhtanim. However, he is mutter to have Hanah from women and from children. Because the term Shchoreh HaRosh refers exclusively to men, as we're going to explain in a second. So the Gemara says, my timer, first of all, why do we say that it includes bald people and people with white hair? Because, again, if he dafka meant to mean people who have hair as opposed to bald people, he would have used a different expression, mibale seir, people who have hair. So therefore, since he didn't do that, Shchoreh HaRosh then includes people where the hair of their head would be visible. There's no impediment to seeing the head of their hair, that's seeing the hair of their head as long as it actually exists. As the Gemara is going to go on to say in a second, people don't always men don't always cover their hair. And the Ran explains further. Once we see that Shchoreh HaRosh does not mean to exclude bald people, by the same token, there's no reason for us to say that it would exclude people with white hair. Therefore, if he had meant to say that to young people who have black hair, he would have said a different lashon. The fact that he says Shchoreh HaRosh implies anybody who acts in the way that Shchoreh HaRosh do, namely that we can see the hair of their head because it's uncovered.
You can't say anything about women?
So, you know, one second. So, umutter b'noshim v'chanim. So now we're saying it's umutter to have anah from women and from children. She'en dekoren shchoreh harosh ala anoshim. Because we're saying that only men are called shchoreh harosh. So, my timer. So, what's the difference? The difference is anoshim zimne de michsu reshayhu, the zimne de miglu reshayhu. Because men, sometimes they cover their head, sometimes they don't. Therefore, we can call them shchoreh harosh. At times, we see the head of their hair, the hair of their head, and therefore, we can call them shchoreh harosh. But women always cover their hair because they have to. We're talking about married women. Yeah. If they're not married, we don't call them noshim. Noshim, generally speaking, means married women. If they're girls, we call them besulos or ktanos or whatever. Uktanim lo olam miglu, and children always have their hair uncovered. So therefore, in other words, the point is Shchoreh HaRosh refers to people where sometimes we see the black head of their hair, the black hair of their head, and sometimes we do not. Children, there'd be no reason to distinguish that way because they always have their heads uncovered anyway. We'll talk about one second. What about wearing a yarmulke? Women always have them covered. Right. Now, what it is you have a big discussion about what are the dinim exactly of a person covering their hair. What exactly is required mitzad din and what is midas chassidus? So based on our Gemara over here would be one possibility that what we mean is apparently children and even adults are not, and even adult men are not required to wear a yarmulke per se, and sometimes they might not. On the other hand, we could say that not necessarily we mean that kids many times they won't have their yarmulke on, but other times they will, but they often it's much, as opposed to with men, for example, we're saying generally they'll keep their heads covered, but unlike women who are also to uncover their heads in public, men would be allowed to. So we don't have a solid proof from here one way or the other. There is the point actually that Taz mentions at the beginning of Hilchos Tzitzis that there's a different reason why we should cover our heads nowadays. He says because it's chukas ha-goyim, because we see that the goyim, when they go to their churches or whatever, they dafka uncover their heads. So therefore we have a reason to keep our heads covered in order not to act in the ways of the goyim. So there's a good deal of discussion about the ins and outs of that. Again, so according to the Taz, it comes out it's required api halacha, whereas according to other achronim, it's maybe only midas chesidra. So maybe only when you're davening, then you're required to keep your head covered, but maybe not otherwise.
So
there are sfaradim who taka don't keep their heads covered except when they daven, right? So the majority minhag nowadays is that people keep their heads covered regardless. But actually, Rav Moshe has an interesting tshuva on the subject. Given everything that we're saying, that there is reason to say that covering your head is only midas chesidus, then he says if a person has a job, for example, if a person has a type of job where the dress code requires him not to wear a yarmulke or a hat, and if he does, he could get fired, then he has a heter under those circumstances to not wear a yarmulke to work, because since we're saying it's only midas chesidus.
Last thing I want to say is those days they allowed people to wear these big round
turbans, right?
Covered most of the head.
So that could be another point as well. That men, even if, right, that's a good point, actually. We could say that children would wear yarmulkes, but a yarmulke doesn't cover most of your head, whereas men, yeah, would wear some kind of hat or turban or something that would cover the majority of their head. There was a different point also that some Mephoshim say that children, very often they would shave their heads completely. So it's one thing a person went bald. We said before he's included in Shchori HaRosh because at one point he was Shchori HaRosh. But children, since regularly they shave their heads, and they would do that, the pashtus, I guess, so they don't get lice or whatever. So therefore, nobody calls them Shchori HaRosh. Again, the Nedarim Holoch HaHalosh Me'adam. You always have to go according to the popular Loshen. Nobody would use the word Shchori HaRosh to refer to children because in general they didn't have black heads, because in general they were kept bald.
Okay, why can't the elders say that this guy is saying Shchoyre Rosh, he only doesn't have enough young people, old people doesn't matter because they would have white hair.
So then he would have said a different Lashon, then he would have said, I don't want to have enough young people, or something to that effect. The fact that he said the word Shchoyre Rosh, which is the general meaning of Shchoyre Rosh by people, is that it means people whose heads are sometimes uncovered, then therefore, again, like the Rosh said, he doesn't get to redefine the term and say that it means something else.
It doesn't matter if it's
Goy or you. The Pashtus, well, that's a good point, actually. I mean, we're saying over here that men, sometimes they cover their heads and sometimes they uncover them. The Pashtus with Goyim, it was the same thing. I mean, they didn't wear a yarmulke, per se, but they...
Was the
Nedr... Right.
Was the Nedr assumed that we're talking about collectively among Yidden?
No, not necessarily. And in fact, we're going to have tomorrow, Best Hashem, we're going to have Nedarim that he mentioned that may include Goyim as well. No, when he says Shchoreh HaRosh, Pashtos would mean both Jews and Goyim. But even Goyim, you have to keep in mind, for example, up until 60, 70 years ago, even in the Goyish world, it was very common to wear hats.
Yeah.
Only beginning in the 1960s did that concept disappear. So in the times of Gemara also, you had some Goyim would go bareheaded, some of them would wear a hat, and then sometimes you'd have the same person would sometimes wear a hat, sometimes not, so yeah.
Okay. He's referring to...
So when he said the Pashtus, he's referring to both Jews and Goyim. Yeah. Okay, Mishnah continues. Hanoidim min ha-yuludim. If a person makes a neder not to have a neder from yuludim. Now, there's actually two different ways of punctuating this word. It can mean the Ran further down on the Amud, brings a pasuk, kol am ha-yiloidim ba-midbar. So according to him, it comes out that in the Mishnah over here, the word should be yiloidim. The point is, what we're going to be discussing, does the word yiloidim mean people who are yet to be born or people who are already born?
Children or?
Children have been born already, but the point. That would be yiloidim, would be children. So yiloidim could mean people who were born already. And the Ran brings, for example, you have a pasuk in Yeshua, kol am ha yiloidim b'midbar. All the people who had been born in the midbar had not yet had a bris milah when they came into Eretz Yisrael.
And that same lesson is what it probably is telling you. The kid, the children will be born. Ha yiloidim.
No, there he uses the expression kol. Well, yeah, kol ben ha yiloid. Actually, that's a good point. Yeah, that's a good point. Kol ben ha yiloid. Any baby. No, so if I can't over there, yiloid means will. Yeah, so that's what we're going to discuss now in the Gemara, is what's Lashon Ova, what's Lashon Asir. Anyway, that's one way of understanding. The Rashash brings over here from the Rashash brings over here from the Vilna Gaon that actually the word should be Yiludim. And you have other psukim that the, that use the word yilud or that or yiludim. That means that we're born. You have the word yilud isha, for example. It's not in Tilim, but yeah. Okay. Anyway, so if he makes a neder from yiludim or yiloidim, mutter banoilod. He will be mutter in people have hana from people who are yet to be born. In other words, we understand that yiloidim or yiludim means people who are already born. On the other hand, minah neilodim, but if he makes a neder not to have hana from the neilodim, which implies the people who are already born, also, or the people who are yet to be born, also minah yiloidim, then he would also be also to have hana from the people who have already been born. Because in other words, the word neilodim would include both. The word neilodim would include the people who are yet to be born as well as the people who are already born.
One word can mean both?
One word can mean both. Yeah, that's what we're going to discuss in the Gemara. On the other hand, Reb Meir matur after yiloidim. Reb Meir says that if he makes a neder from neilodim, then he is mutter even in yiloidim. He's mutter even to have hana from people who are already born. So now the Gemara is going to say, so according to Reb Meir, then there's no neder at all. Who is the neder covering? So we're going to see in the Gemara.
Himself. He can't have hana from himself.
No, well, yeah, fine. But never, so that's the question. If Reb Meir is saying that if he says mina neilodim, then he's mutter also mina by yiloidim, Then who is the neder? Then who is the neder chal? Then it would be like neder habai. No, but in general, we're assuming in these mishnayos that these are genuine nedarim, and we just have to figure out who they apply to. There is a concept where we say ain't another mosi dvarav lavatala. Especially, in fact, I think we say that a mayor himself holds that a person doesn't just speak without meaning something. So if he's making a neder, then he has to mean something. So what exactly is being covered according to a mayor? So we're going to see in the Gemara. The Chum say, when he uses the word neilodim, he means people, and for that matter, creatures that are born, as opposed to the Gemara is going to say, for example, fish and birds, which are hatched from eggs. So in other words, according to the Chachamim, yes, when he says neilodim, then it means that he's also in people who were born and who are yet to be born. So now the Ran explains we don't have three opinions in the Mishnah over here. We have two opinions. We have the Chachamim and we have the Meir. The Chachamim are saying that if he makes a neder from Neilodim, then he's also in everybody who was yet born, who was already born and who has yet to be born. Then Reb Meir is saying that no. So in other words, because the Chachamim are saying the word Neilodim implies equally well people who were already born and people who are not yet born. So that would be the Chachamim. Then Reb Meir says the word Reb Meir holds that Loshem Bnei Adam is that Neilodim means only people who are yet to be born. So we're going to see in the Gemara who Reb Meir says he's also in actually. And then the Chachamim at the end of the Mishnah are clarifying that the word Neilodim has nothing to do with past or future. It means people. It means creatures that are born as opposed to creatures that are created in other ways. So that's according to the Ran. The Rosh learns differently. He says there are actually three opinions. He says there are actually three opinions in the Mishnah over here. You have the Tanakhama, you have Reb Meir, and then you have the Chachamim at the end, where the Chachamim at the end are saying that Neilodim means any creature that's born, and where Reb Meir had said that no, it doesn't. So in other words, the Rosh explains that actually that the Chachamim, like this, in the Reisha of the Mishnah, we said there's a difference between Yiloidim and Neilodim. Now the Chachamim at the end of the Mishnah are saying there's actually no difference whether he uses the word yiloidim or the word neilodim. Either way, it includes any creatures that are born, that are born, that will be born, that have already been born or whatever. It includes all of that. So you have three different opinions over here. The Tanakhama, who would say there's a difference between the Lashonis, Reb Meir would say there's no difference, that it's all mutter, and the Chachamim, who would say that it's all awesome. So now let's clarify. The Gemara asks, "Well, a mayor, will I be buying neilodim?" So you're telling me, according to the mayor, if he makes a neder from neilodim, then he's mutter. He said after yiloidim, he's mutter even in the ones who are already born. So then, what does that mean? Is Mutter also in the ones that are already born? Are you saying that needless to say, he's Mutter in the ones who are already born? Elamiman also. Well, then, according to the Meir, who is he also from? The Neder doesn't seem to accomplish anything. The answer is Chasurin Machsara. The Mishnah is missing a phrase. Well, Hachi Katani, what it means is like this. Hanoda mina yiloidim. If a person makes a neder not to have anah from the yiloidim, again, yiloidim, we're going to say right now means, we're going to say that yiloidim means, like we said before, the ones who are already born.
Already,
because yeah, so the Ran explains, in other words, that again, we have the pasuk, for example, Kolam ha'yiloidim bamidbar, all the people who were born in the desert had not had a bris milah when they went into Eretz Yisrael, so therefore the word yiloidim definitely means in the past. So if a person makes a neder from yiloidim, mutter b'neilodim, then he's mutter in the ones that are yet to be born, mina neilodim also b'yiloidim, but the Tanakama is saying that if he says mina neilodim, then it also includes the yiloidim, it also includes the ones who are already born. Reb Meir Omer, when Reb Meir says af, what he means is, af panodim, mina neilodim, mutter b'yiloidim, also if a person makes a neder that he won't have enough from neilodim, from the ones who are yet to be born, mutter b'yiloidim, he will be mutter, and the ones who are already born, ki heichi denodim in a yiloidim mutter b'neilodim. The same way as if he makes a neder not to have enough from yiloidim, he's mutter and neilodim. In other words, Reb Meir is not saying that the neder has no effect at all. What he's saying is, look, you Tanakama are saying that yiloidim does not include neilodim, but you're saying on the contrary, though, neilodim includes everybody. I'm saying that no, each one of them includes only one class of people. Yiloidim is people who are already born. Neilodim exclusively. Neilodim is people who are yet to be born exclusively. And therefore, whichever lashon he uses, then it's only covering one of those groups. So unlike you Tanakama, who are saying that the word neilodim is a general term that includes both of them, I'm saying that neilodim only includes the ones who are yet to be born, so I'm making myself also to have enough from those people who are not yet born, but not that there would be a problem with the yiloidim, the ones who are already born.
How do you have enough from someone who's not born yet?
Well, in other words, what he's saying is when the person is born, I'll be also to have enough from him.
Oh.
So in other words, he's saying that whoever's
living
right now, I'm also to have enough from, but whoever is born from now on, I'll be also, yeah. So that's what Reb Meir means. So again, according to the Ran, we only have two opinions in the Mishnah. We have the Tanakama, we have Reb Meir, and then the Chachamim at the end are explaining that the word Neilodim is a general term, unlike you, Reb Meir, who say that Neilodim means only the ones who are yet to be born. It means anybody should doubtfully evolve it, any creature that's created by being born. That comes into existence by being born. And then, according to the Rosh, what we're saying is we actually have three opinions where you have the Tanakama is distinguishing between Yiloidim and Neilodim. Reb Meir is also distinguishing between them. He just says that neither one covers the other. And then you have the Chachamim at the end who say it doesn't matter. Both the Shonis, Yiloidim and Neilodim, are both general terms that cover everybody who is born and who has yet to be born. And it just means Misha doubtfully evolved. So again, it means that according to the Chachamim, then it would mean he'd be mutter to have enough birds and fish, but not from anything else.
And what's about the first one on Mishnah, which is the
Tanakama?
Right.
So according to the Tanakama, what we're saying is if he says yiloidim, then he means the people who are already born. He's also, but the noilodim, the ones who are yet to be born, the ones who are the ones who haven't been born yet, he's mutter to have enough from them. Now, the Tanakama had said that if he says noilodim, it includes everybody. So now the way the Gemara explained it, Reb Meir is arguing on that second point. He says the same way as yiloidim means only one type of people, the ones who are already born, the same way noilodim means only one type of people, the people who are not born yet. Yeah. Okay, so the Gemara says, Omelera popula abaya. Lememra, so Rapapa Asabaya, Lememra, are you telling me the Neilodim de Misyalden Mashma, that the word Neilodim means people who are already born, or that Neilodim means people who are yet to be born, Elameata, by that logic, what do you do with the Pasuk in Parshas Vayechi, where Yaakov says to Yosef, Shnei Bonecha ha Neilodim Lechob Eretz Mitzrayim, you two children that Neilodim to you in Mitzrayim, Menashe and Ephraim, that they'll be considered Shlotim of their own? What do you mean they're yet to be born? Menashe and Ephraim were already teenagers at the time. So how can we say that Nolodim means people who are yet to be born? So Gemara answers back, Be'elamai, do you lead your mashma? So what are you going to tell me then? The word Nolodim necessarily means people who are already born. On the contrary, Elamai after, but you have a pasuk in Melachim. Yerobam is set up as Eglei Azahav. He's standing one day on his Mizbeach and doing Karbonis in front of one of them. And a Navi comes and tells him, Hine Bein Noilad the Beis David. Behold, a son Noilad, meaning will be born to Beis David. Yeshiyahu Shmo, his name is Yeshiyahu. And he will destroy this Mizbeach and these all these places of Avodah Zarah that you, Yerobam, have set up. And this was hundreds of years before Yoshiyahu was born. Hachinami Dahava. Are you going to say Nolad means he's already born? But Hadan Menashe, like, well, even Menashe, who's Yoshiyahu's grandfather, wasn't even born yet. Menashe himself was a Rosha, like Yerovam. That might be why the Gemara is mentioning him. But the point is that this was hundreds of years before Yoshiyahu was born. So obviously, there Nolad means he will be born. So, what is it? Does Nolad mean was born already, as we have by Menashe and Ephraim? Or does it mean will be born, as it means by Yoshiyahu? Ela mashma hachi or mashma hachi. Rather, the answer is the word noilad could indeed mean either one. But when nedarim holochach alosh neodem, when it comes to nedarim, you have the great general rule that you go according to losh neodem. Unlike in the pasuk, where the word noilad sometimes means one and sometimes means the other, in losh neodem, it means one particular thing. So then the question is going to be what? So the question is going to be which thing does it mean? So now the Ran explains that you actually have the Meir and the Chachamim are just arguing what does the Loshen Mene Adam mean? What do people use the word Nolad to mean? However, on the other hand, Nimukka Yosef doesn't like that explanation because what do you mean? Go ask people on the street and see what they say. So he explains that you have some people use the Loshen of the Torah where Nolad means both, as we just established. Most other people instead use Nolad to mean one or the other. Here, he doesn't remember. He made the neder. Now, he doesn't remember whether he meant the Loshen of the Torah or the Loshen Bnei Adam. So now, Rameyer is going to say, you go according to the Loshen Bnei Adam. The majority of people use it in one sense. Therefore, you have to go according to that. But Chum said, the fact is, you have to be concerned. There are the myriad of people who use the word Nolad in the sense that the Torah used it, where it means both, where it means either past or future. And therefore, you have to be choshesh that he might have meant that. The Chum say that he meant only ones that are normally born, which again, according to the Ran, the Chachamim are just reiterating what it said in the Reisha, that there's a difference between Yiloidim and Nolodim, that one Yiloidim will mean the ones who are already born, Nolodim will mean the ones who are going to be born in the future. And according to the Rosh, what we're saying is the Chachamim are a third opinion, and they're saying whether you use the word Yiloidim or Nolodim, either way it means creatures that are normally born. So La'apuki Mai, as opposed to what? La'apuki Dogim Ba'ofis, it comes to exclude fish and birds, it comes to exclude birds and fish, because those aren't born, those are hatched out of eggs. So therefore, when he says, he makes the neder, Yiloidim or Nolodim, or whatever, it doesn't include those, whether they already are born, whether they already exist, or whether they're yet to be, or whether they're yet to be hatched, because those are not in the category of Leda at all.
Now that Mark explained it, what's the actual machlekes between the Chum and the Meir?
So now the actual, so that's the thing. In the Mishnah, the way we had the Mishnah of Meir Matar after Yiloidim, it sounded like the Meir was saying that everyone is Matar, but that can't be, because then what's the Neder? So what the Gemara explained is, the Chachamim are saying that the word Yiloidim means only the ones who are already born, but the word Nolodim means both the ones who are already born and the ones who are not yet born. The Rameyer is saying that no, the word Nolodim also means only one group of people, namely the ones who are yet to be born. Yeah. And then again, you have the Chachamim Om at the end of the Mishnah, you have the Ran versus the Rosh, whether we're talking the third opinion or whether they're just reiterating the opinion of the Tanakh. Okay. Shabbat shalom, everyone.